Hi, folks. Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes. Podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today we are rewinding back to April the 11th, 2018. And you might wonder why you're getting a rewind today. We could talk about elections. We could talk about homesteading stuff and ignore the elections. There's a lot of stuff we could be talking about. I woke up this morning, though, and I started planning a show. And I realized that there is one thing above all things that have come out of this election that I'm grateful for. And that's that Ross Ulbricht, who has been in prison since 2013 for the heinous crime of building a website. And that's really what it comes down to. Yet 2013, 11 years, this man's been in federal prison on lockdown almost all day long, every day of his life. And it was probably about, I'm going to say 2015 or 16, the first time that I met Lynn Ulbricht. And I told my wife this morning that I remember meeting her. And I remember realizing who she was. And I gave her a hug. And I felt like I was hugging the most broken human I have ever met in my life. When my best friend passed away a few years earlier than this, his wife, at that point, was the most broken person I had ever, you know, been in contact with. I remember hugging her and feeling how broken she was. And it was the exact same feeling for Lynn. And there's a difference, really, in somebody spending the rest of their life in prison for something they shouldn't even be in prison for, and somebody dying. In some ways, obviously, dying's worse, but dying is something we move on from. No matter how tragic, eventually the living must go on because the dead aren't with us anymore, at least in body. When you have someone you care about that much, and they're in federal prison, and every day when you wake up, the first thing you think of is, I hope they're okay, that's a whole different kind of broken. So you probably have looked at the title of this episode, and you probably already know why I picked today's show, but if you haven't, if you're just listening, if it just sequentially played on your podcast player or whatever, on April the 11th, 2018, I brought Lynn Ulbricht on the show. And she told us all about Silk Road. She told us that some of the men who collected the evidence that put her son away for double life plus 20 were convicted of tampering with evidence and sent to prison themselves, but the jury who convicted Ross were not allowed to know that that happened. Let me say that again. These guys, you can hear Lynn explain it, they were convicted of stealing Bitcoin and tampering with evidence, and the jury was not permitted to know this. There were massive irregularities. There was a ridiculous sentence. He was lied about in the media that the conviction included, you know, people being hired for murder and all, was never even brought up in the case. This was a complete abuse of the justice system, something that we have seen recently used in other ways. This was the government, in the early days of Bitcoin, trying to destroy Bitcoin by destroying a man. And that man, and man, I want to believe it, and man, the dude better follow through. Now, Orange Man, you better follow through. I expect this to happen. And I told my wife this morning, as far as I know, the federal prison that Ross is in Tucson. I want to be there when he walks out. I don't care when it is. I don't care where I have to fly to get there. I don't care what I have to do. I will watch that man walk out of prison and hug his mom. And I will watch that woman, for the first time since 2013, become unbroken. And so when I started thinking about what I wanted to do for a show today, it wasn't that I wanted another day off, though I'm going to use it to get everything, you know, ready for the shows next week. I'll probably get a jump start on tomorrow's expert counsel show, so I'm going to use the time. But I'm not doing it so I can have the time. No. I'm doing it because this has to be one of the best days in her life and in her son's life and in the lives of people that care about this whole thing since it started. I cannot tell you the absolute venom and hatred that I will help be focused on the Orange Man if he breaks his word on this. But right now I have no reason to believe that he will. I think if anybody has seen how the federal DOJ can be abused, it's Donald Trump. And so I expect Trump to go through with what he said and do this on day one. He said that back in April. Ross tweeted it out and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I guess he gets limited access to social media. And now I want to see it happen. So I thought today there is nothing I could do better than to honor all of this by letting you hear what Lynn had to say about all of it back in 2018. And so that you can realize sometimes there are outcomes from elections that may not change your life, but they really matter. To have a man as young as him who's never harmed anybody, who had absolutely no criminal record, railroaded this way, was a disgrace. He's lost, what, 11 years of his life. He can never get those back. But I'm going to tell you something. The rest of his life is going to be pretty good because there are a lot of people that have been waiting for this day. And I don't know what he'll want to do as far as a career or anything, but I do know that there won't be a Liberty Summit or anything like that anywhere where he won't be one of the most in-demand speakers that you will ever hear from. I'm rooting for him. I'm planning to travel to Tucson. I'm planning to be there. If the family wants the people to just stay away and cheer for him or he walks out and not engage at all other than that, I am fine with that. But I will be there. And I'd like to try to make it where maybe many of us will be there. I don't think you get many wins like this. It's not necessarily that the win is big, because for most of us, it's not going to change our lives. But the win matters in a big way, because the miscarriage of justice was so deep. So let us rewind today. April 11th, 2018, Lynn Albright on Silk Road and going to the Supreme Court on behalf of her son. That mission ultimately failed. But yesterday, I think we took the step toward being able to actually say, mission accomplished, and mean it. Next up, let's go ahead and get Lynn on the air now. Again, Lynn is a... I would refer to Lynn as a political activist by circumstance. I don't think that's what Lynn wanted in her life. I think if 20 years ago you said, Lynn, do you want to be a political activist, a rights activist, fighting for liberty in our country, she would have said no. And I think if she could go back to the way things were before her son's life was basically ruined and destroyed, and even if he ever gets to walk free again, still, I mean, the damage is huge. I don't think that's what she would have wanted to do. And when she was presented with the situation of her son facing doing the rest of his life in a federal prison, she had choices. She could make it all about just him and fight. She could have done what most people would have done, which is give up or, you know, file some paperwork or whatever, but just basically go into a depression state. Or she could realize how wrong it was and fight not just for her son, but for the liberties of all. That's what Lynn's been doing. She's really an inspirational person to me, and I'm grateful to have her with us today. And with that, hey, Lynn, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad to have you. I got to finally meet you up in New Hampshire this year. That made the trip alone worth being there.
Thanks.
You've been through hell, just frankly, and so has your son. And you're doing everything you can to help him, and it's made you something I imagine you probably never thought you would be, which is a political activist. Mm-hmm.
for those that maybe are not familiar with the basics, can you just kind of give people up to speed with who is Ross and, yeah, and what is his situation right now?
Yeah, well, Ross was a young idealist, worked for the Ron Paul campaign, a libertarian who was on fire for freedom and all about free markets and cryptocurrency and Bitcoin back when he was 26, which was, I guess, 2011. And he initially created a video game based on Austrian economics and free market principles. Almost got it published, didn't, and then turned to the internet and created a website called Silk Road, which was designed to protect the privacy and anonymity of its users. And it was product agnostic. It was up to the users, you know, buyers and sellers, what they wanted to exchange using Bitcoin, which hardly anybody had heard of at the time. And there were many legal things on, but there, you know, the anonymity of it did attract drug exchanges. There were, it did have rules because it was based on a very strict philosophy of voluntary interaction and do no harm and don't use force. And so things like child pornography, for example, or other things that created victims like stolen property were not allowed. But it was an open market and drugs were allowed. It was as considered a free choice. So anyway, it became really big. In the meantime, Ross didn't testify, his defense attorney did, that he passed it along. It got out of hand. But Ross ultimately was held responsible for it and is now, and he was given, for all nonviolent charges, double life plus 40 years without parole in prison. This is someone who has no criminal history. No victims came forward at trial to say he had harmed them. Prior offenses, none of that, no history of violence at all. And in fact, there's 100 letters on freeross.org, our website, talking about, from people who actually know Ross, talking about his character and who he really is. But he still got a worse sentence than murderers, kidnappers, and a lot of violent people. And I have my own ideas about why. But in any case, that's what we're facing right now. And, I've gotten to learn a lot about the criminal justice system in this country, and it's not a pretty picture, I can tell you that.
Did you not tell me in New Hampshire that one of the things the judge said during his sentencing was that your ideas are dangerous?
Well, what she said was, we know you started this site based on a philosophy. And for philosophical reasons is how she put it. And I don't know that that's a philosophy you've left behind. Well, she was right. He did start it for philosophical reasons. And the philosophy is basically libertarian. It's, free choice. And, you know, we can argue the pros and cons. And I really don't defend a lot of the things on Silk Road. People choose to do a lot of bad things on the Internet, not only on Silk Road. I mean, on Amazon and Facebook and Craigslist and all kinds of things. I'm not defending that. But the idea behind it was free choice, and she apparently found this extremely threatening. She also said there are posts on the site, and she didn't say Ross wrote them, but just the fact that they were on the site, she held him responsible for them, which is another question. But she said there are posts on the site that call the government the oppressor, and that's very dangerous and troubling and misguided. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, we're allowed to call the government the oppressor in this country. In fact, I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who said it was our duty to, you know, if the government's being an oppressor, to say so and perhaps even replace them. So, for her to drag up the philosophy is a First Amendment problem. And, she did.
So that's actually frightening, and it should scare the hell out of every person out there, because even the person says, well, I'm not going to make a website for people to sell drugs on. You're not getting it. And kind of on that note, can you talk about some of the issues that Ross and his legal team have brought before the Supreme Court?
Yeah, so this has gone through, we've gone through the whole gamut, and so now Ross is at knocking on the door of the Supreme Court, and actually this Friday it will go into conference with the justices of the Supreme Court, at which time they will decide what's going to happen with this case. And we'll know Monday. So it's coming right up. But there's a lot of precedents that are being set with this case that have nothing to do with drugs at all, that are bigger than that and very much impact our constitutional protections. But the two issues that are specifically before the court is one is a Fourth Amendment question, which is, does the government have the, can the government legally and constitutionally without a warrant seize and search an individual's internet history and use it to arrest them, without a warrant, without probable cause, which is basically legalese for a good reason presented to the court. So the government is saying, yes, it does. And they're basing it on law that is almost four decades old now called, it's evolved to be called the third party doctrine. And it's based on a case before the Supreme Court in 1979, Smith versus Maryland, I believe. And it was about the court ruled that the government didn't need a warrant to put a pen trap on numbers that an individual dialed out of a rotary phone. I mean, this is pre even push button phone, never mind cell phone. This is way back. And the Supreme Court said they don't need a warrant. And they've been using this same principle based on the rotary phone to say it's okay for them to basically rummage through our internet browsing history and without a warrant, just with no oversight at all, just total open season. And it's very problematic when you think about all the private and relevant information that is on, you know, part of our internet activity. You know, there's, first of all, political affiliations. If the government searches this and doesn't like those, they can use that. There's religious affiliations, sexual orientation, medical information, all kinds of stuff that's open season under this doctrine, this third-party doctrine.
And so people understand this fully. This is not your Facebook profile. This is not publicly available information. This is your private information that they've garnered by seizing your computers without a warrant.
Correct. They don't even have to take the physical computer.
Okay.
They can do it remotely.
Sure.
they did with Ross. They can do it remotely, and they can find out all kinds of information about individuals.
Well, that's interesting
also,
because,
correct me if I'm wrong,
they actually came and got your computer,
mm-hmm.
for that they would require a warrant. But since they
That's a very good point.
Oh.
Because let's say it was a physical file cabinet like it used to be, you know, and we had files and folders. That would also require a warrant. But they're saying, well, no, I mean, you know, this is different. This is, you gave over your IP address to, in this case, Comcast, and you gave up your right to privacy. And the other thing I just want, you brought up the point where people go, well, I'm not going to start a drug site. Well, there's a lot of implications to this. For example, they can use this information to blackmail judges, public officials, you know, and use it, this information, for all kinds of nefarious purposes. And of course, persecute groups they don't like. And as I just mentioned before the show, I mean, your listeners are probably interested to know there was a couple that was hauled in by the a SWAT team for having Facebook posts. This was Facebook posts, but still, for survivalist Facebook posts that were nonviolent. I mean, and so, you know, if they're targeting certain groups, they can go in to and use information against you that's perfectly innocent. So this is a very big question, you know, because we're on the verge here of the digital age, right? They're trying to fit 20th century law that's four decades old to control things and give them license in the digital age. And they have so much more power and invasive ability in the digital age. And the law needs to catch up. So that's one of the purposes of this whole thing with Ross's case, is we're hoping it does help the law to catch up and to not, because the Fourth Amendment's being shredded. It's losing any of its, you know, relevance even.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the concept that you could do this is, it just flies. I think any rational person that put aside whatever bias might influence them and just looked at it straight up as a constitutional issue, it, with all honesty, would say, of course that information would require a warrant. especially if we look at, we always talk about the intent of the founding documents. Well, the intent of the founding documents was that people would be secure in their papers and their persons. Well, our digital papers today are no different from that standpoint. I can't see a difference at all.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, darn, the founding fathers forgot to put laptops in there. How remiss of them. Give me a break. It's like, it's lame.
Yeah.
Except that they're using it and doing it.
Well, if that was the case, then, okay, you also don't have a right to freedom of speech using electronic means. Right?
Good
so, I
point.
Mean, like, it's, mm-hmm. there's a lot of things that start to spider into this. For instance, I think you know Tatiana Maruz.
Oh, yeah.
You've been on her show, I think. She had a site she wanted to bring out, and it's a different side of this, but it had something to do with artists being able to monetize their content and creating their own tokens. Mm-hmm. And one way or another, the people advising her legally looked at Ross's case and said, hold on, you can be held accountable for what these people do. And that they could come after her for some sort of FTC violation if one of the artists mishandled the way that they rolled out a token, for instance.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just, so you create a climate of fear where people are afraid to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the main tools of government. I don't have to prosecute you if I intimidate you into an action.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. Just like taking those survivalists because of their posts on Facebook. Well, now how is that going to chill free speech on Facebook about, you know, survivalist things, you know, tips or whatever, just different, because these people were hauled in by a SWAT team. And it's you know, the criminal umbrella is expanding very rapidly, and it's very scary. It really is.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to read exactly what those people wrote. I found the article, but obviously I can't give you my attention and read it.
No, I know. But I mean, and I'm assuming it happened. I didn't really look into it.
Oh, it looks like it happened.
Yeah.
It happened. Now, you know, there's a big difference between we think the government sucks and we should all grab our AR-15s and head to the Capitol. I mean,
oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't know what they actually posted yet.
That's true. I don't either.
But we'll see. And it's still very disturbing that you would raid people like that with a SWAT team. I mean,
yeah.
Of course, they've raided people with a SWAT team over pigs. So, I mean, there's kind of a pattern of behavior. And, you know, some of this stuff is about saying the government's oppressive and all. But, like, okay, what is sociopathic behavior? But raiding a guy in Minnesota over the fact that he had some pigs that were the wrong color, which is a real thing. That really happened, right?
Wow.
Or giving a guy double life plus 40 for building a website.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sociopathic nature to behavior like that. That's since we don't like it, we're going to deeply destroy your life, basically. And that's, you know, that's a classic sociopath.
Right, and it's also that intimidation like you're talking about. He's kind of like the head on the spike of the medieval castle. They put the heads up there, you know, that they beheaded people. It's like, this will happen to you. Of course, it didn't work. It didn't deter anything.
No.
Yeah, that's what, you're right, that's what they're doing. And I think a lot of people now do fear the government. I run into it. People say, oh, you're so brave to speak out. I'm like, it shouldn't require courage for me to criticize the government in our country. This is America. I should feel very secure in doing that. And people don't. They're afraid. And there's this climate of intimidation and fear going on that, I think is only going to get worse. And people, you know, I'm hoping people will step up and take a stand because, we're going to lose our freedom.
Yeah, because what I've noticed is what everybody's actually willing to speak up about and protest about today is they want the government to do more. They went to the government. What happened to standing up against the government and saying, stop doing these things?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it's very Orwellian. It's quite frightening.
It is.
Can you talk about some other reasons that
decisions
are important? I mean, because it's.
Well, yeah, there was the other part of the Supreme Court petition, and then there's other stuff too, but the other part of the Supreme Court petition is the Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial. Because what happened in Ross's case, and I've actually talked to other people who said it happened to them, and Ross knows many people in prison who it's happened to them, is that the judge did not rely on what the jury ruled to enhance his sentence. She relied on uncharged allegations from the government that were never proven at trial of murder for hire that Ross denies, and that there was no murder, and the government never bothered to prove it in front of a jury, but the judge took it upon herself to reference it and justify her sentencing with this allegation that was never proven. And the point of the petition is, wait a second, we have a Sixth Amendment to exactly stop this kind of thing for a judge to basically, a potentially, I'm not saying she is, but a potentially corrupt or rogue judge, it's to defend the accused from this kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have jury trials. And what's happening in our country, which is I've learned through this whole thing, is that the jury trial is becoming extinct. Now 98% of the accused plea because they're bullied or threatened by prosecutors who basically run the courtrooms. And they're told, and they're rightly told, that if they go to trial, they'll probably lose and they'll get a worse punishment. So you better plea. And this is even people who plea to things they haven't done. I mean, you know, and so most people don't go to trial anymore. So we're losing that bulwark of our justice system. And it's been going on for a long time. And judges have just decided, well, I decided it's true. I've just decided.
Which is completely, I mean, if you talk about unconstitutional, and I think what people really need to understand to really have that point driven home, it is not just that the prosecution failed to obtain a conviction on those charges. Those charges were never brought or even presented to the jury. Like, that was just not part of his case. And then the judge says, well, and I think this. So, I mean, not a guy I want to defend, but a classic example would have been O.J. Simpson. When he stole stuff and held people at gunpoint or whatever, like, he had to be tried for that, right? Mm-hmm. Not the charge that he beat 13 years earlier or what have you. Whether you like it or not, here's a guy you could actually say probably has victims, right? But like that, and people thought I was crazy. I said, no, I agree with that, because if you won't protect that person, who are you going to protect?
That's right.
Right? We're all supposed to have the same rights and the same obligation of the state, if they want to take your liberty, to prove guilt. And you're right. The Sixth Amendment is exactly to prevent a judge from just saying, well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think has no place in – I think in a courtroom would be a subject matter expert saying, I think based on the evidence that it's likely that. Not for a judge.
Exactly.
It should not even be in their vocabulary.
That's correct. And it's beyond a reasonable doubt, by the way. It's not just proving it. It's beyond a reasonable doubt. And, you know, but to not even bring it to trial and use it is, I didn't know you could do this. And I remember saying to Ross's attorney, I'm like, well, wait a minute. They didn't charge him. He goes, yeah, I know they do that. He's like jaded.
Yeah, I know and, they do that.
I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And, so yeah, that's another issue. Actually, those are the two issues because you can't bring a whole bunch of stuff before the Supreme Court. No more than two,
yeah.
Because they want broad reaching. They want very narrow, you know, in terms. So those are the two issues. But there's a bunch more precedents that are being set that I'd be happy to quickly name a few.
Please.
It doesn't take. Yeah. Well, one, of course, is again back to the Fourth Amendment, but the assault on privacy. And just recently it's come out in secret, top secret Snowden memos just came out that the NSA was targeting, at quote unquote, urgently targeting Bitcoin users a few months before they arrested Ross. And this is illegal. And but this is what they were doing. And Edward Snowden even came out and said that it's unthinkable the NSA wasn't involved in the investigation. And the NSA is, you know, it's been established that they do this. They spy on Americans and they pass along the information to Department of Homeland Security or Drug Enforcement Agency or whoever, and again, can use it to blackmail people. They can use it to prosecute people, and it's very scary. Supposedly illegal, but it doesn't have any oversight, and it's coming out that they do this. And I think in Ross's case, this isn't exactly precedent, but I just to touch on this because it's a Bitcoin thing, that's why they went after Ross so hard. Because they needed a scapegoat for the Bitcoin. They did. Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, was behind the case. He was behind the investigation. He was a ranking member of the Senate Finance Committee. And I believe they were quite alarmed about this upstart currency that they couldn't control or tax. And I'm quite convinced of it after this NSA revelation, as well as the fact that the biggest drug dealer, actual drug dealer, because Ross was not convicted of actually selling drugs, got 10 years. The biggest heroin and cocaine seller got 5. The biggest meth dealer got 3. And the guy who was running Silk Road 2.0, which was bigger and sold more drugs, is free. He got no time. And so I don't think they really care about drugs. And that gets into the drug war and that whole thing. But I think that they were very concerned about Bitcoin. We talked about the assault on free speech and condemning him for his philosophy, which is really scary, as you said. It means, you know, Congress even passed a law that you cannot use someone's political philosophy or beliefs against them in a sentencing because, you know, for obvious reasons. And, of course, the First Amendment. And yet that happened. And she used that to, you know, justify the sentence, the whole Sixth Amendment issue. And just the precedent of such excessive sentencing in the United States now. Life sentences have quintupled in this country since the 80s. It used to be, you know, when I was a kid, certainly, and growing up, hardly anybody got life. And if they did, they got out on parole, if they were for good behavior or whatever. But they didn't have to murder, you know, be major, dangerous, massive murderers. And now there's, like Ross, 17,000 people with life sentences who are nonviolent in our system. And over 60% of prisoners now are nonviolent drug offenders. It's just feeding this mass incarceration that's a huge moneymaker, jobs program, and is shredding our constitutional protections. It's a really frightening trend that's going on with excessive sentencing and just packing the prisons. And, you know, I get to know the people in the prisons because I go there all the time to see Ross and the families. And I see the kids and how harmed and suffering they are to be dragged away from their father. And it's just, and of course, statistically, they're more likely to end up in prison. It becomes this vicious cycle. And, you know, a lot of these people are nonviolent.
Well, this is done on the premise that we have to protect our children from drugs and the drug war and everything. And since Reagan launched the drug war in the early 80s, the use of narcotics per capita is pretty much a flat line. If not increased in the last 10, 15 years because of opiate addictions, but it's literally had no impact on protecting anybody from anything.
That's right. Well, it's actually made things more dangerous because the cartels, of course, create a lot of violence in the neighborhoods, in the cities. But no, absolutely. It's been over $1 trillion. It's been over 45 years that we've supposedly been trying to stop drugs with the drug war. And it's the biggest failure, huge expense to taxpayers. And, even the government must have figured out it doesn't work by now, but they're making so much money and gaining so much power with it that it works well for them.
Well, anything think of the children, they will use like a club forever, and they don't care about the children, or they wouldn't be doing this. They care about the children of the person that's in prison for the rest of their life instead of the etherical children that don't really exist that they use to sell, the average soccer mom on this is important for your kids because they're going to come get your kids. And on another note, I read reports when this was all going on that they could conclusively show that drug violence went down when people were exchanging drugs on Silk Road because it was safer.
Right. There is that harm reduction argument. Yeah. I mean, the courts don't really, they're like, well, it doesn't matter if it's illegal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that's true.
It's dangerous philosophical thought.
Yeah. I think it was more about the thought and the Bitcoin, which is kind of the thought. I mean, Bitcoin, monetary freedom. There's also the question of vicarious liability, that making one person responsible for the actions of another, and in this case, a website host, responsible for what happens on their site. And this is a big question because actually in civil cases, they're not held responsible. But in criminal cases, well, this might be the first, they're held responsible. And yet, as I was mentioning before, you know, we've got Craigslist and murders happening. We have Amazon where a girl bought cyanide and killed herself with it. Facebook has murders on Facebook Live. eBay has stolen property. I mean, there's all on and on and on. And I'm not saying those people should be hauled into prison, but we're not giving equal protection under the law here. But they even went after Federal Express under the same theory, which was people use FedEx to transport pharmaceuticals that they were illegal.
Yeah.
And they criminally indicted Federal Express for drug trafficking and money laundering. And under this thing of, well, they didn't indict, I haven't indicted the post office, by the way, but in any case, FedEx, but FedEx has deep pockets, fought it, and they dropped it finally, but it was the same principle. It's very expansive. It's saying you are responsible for how someone uses a service you provide, a website you have, and we can haul you in as a criminal because that happens, even if you don't know about it or, you know, whatever. And this is a really scary theory of law that they're applying. And
how far does that go, right? So exactly. Think about it this way. So there are millions of Facebook user groups and company pages. So if in one of my groups, two people get together and conspire to harm somebody else, am I responsible? Or is Mark Zuckerberg responsible? Or are we both responsible? Or are the people that actually did it responsible? Like, this is this is where you move into this world where not everybody is held accountable, but when it's expedient and useful, there's always something to hold you accountable for. That's exactly the world I think they're trying to create, where we can get you, even within our own little rule book, whenever we want to, no matter who you are, so you better not upset us.
Exactly. And there's a book called Three Felonies a Day that the whole premise is that we all commit unknowingly, usually, three felonies a day. And if they want to get you on something, they will. And that's not good. This is not a good situation. It's creating, making us criminals. Exactly. And responsible for other people. And then there's a whole thing of conspiracy charges. I love conspiracy charges because you can be in a conspiracy and barely even know what's going on. And also aiding and abetting. Somehow you've aided and abetted this. Well, that means you're just as responsible as the person doing it. I mean, there's all these things about, you know, that create more criminals and a wider criminal umbrella that the government can use if they choose to. And,
they also take an accused party when you have almost no evidence and create evidence by threatening the people around them with these potentials, aiding, abetting, obstruction of justice, et cetera. Or you can just say these things. Well, that's not what happened. Well, I'm telling you, I know of conversations like that. Well, that's what we know happened. And I understand you're not saying that's what happened, but if you want this deal, that's what you're going to say.
Oh, yeah.
Happened. And that's how they'll phrase it. So they haven't told you to lie. They say, we know this happened this way. And we believe that you know it happened this way. So we'll give you this deal if you'll say these words this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they make a lot of deals. That's right. And by the way, you brought up another good point, because the low evidence standards, it's like, okay, in Ross's case, for example, almost all the evidence was digital. There wasn't a witness. There wasn't DNA. There weren't fingerprints. And even then they mess up. But in Ross's case, it was digital. So it's images on a screen. Now, I've talked to crypto security experts, many of them, and they all say, you can tamper with this. You can delete stuff. You can add stuff. You can change stuff, and no one can possibly know. There's no way forensically to prove it. So, so here we are with all this digital evidence that is presented to the jury that, well, just to give you an example, a mortgage company won't take a screenshot of a bank statement because they know how easily faked it is. You have to show them the original. They won't go, you can't just send it to them digitally, because they know how, you just have Photoshop and change it. And this now has become a standard of evidence because of Ross's case, that this judge has a lower standard than a mortgage company. And just think about it. They can manufacture out of thin air digital evidence that they go, well, yeah, that's true. That chat happened. This happened. That happened. And we even found, well, we, not me, but the defense team, after the fact, because there was so much stuff they dumped on the defense before trial, there was no human way to go through it all. It was 4 terabytes of stuff, found tampering. And if there's, if we're ever managed to get a new trial, that will be part of that trial. There's tampered evidence. But you, the only way we knew it was tampered was because another folder with the full thing was discovered. And in comparison, you can see it's deleted. Yeah, it was deleted. Big, very important part. But otherwise, you'd never know. Digital evidence doesn't leave a trace.
Well, it's not just, okay, the tyrannical government can frame you. What if I don't like you?
Yes.
What if I don't like you?
Or you're setting somebody up, like Ross believes.
Yeah, well, and I'm a hacker, and I just don't like you, and I don't want you around anymore, and you're my competition, and I can just set all this up, and then I can just maybe key in the feds and say, hey, I think you should look at this guy.
Absolutely.
And here's where you should look, and miraculously, just where I said you should look.
Exactly. Right? That's what look. I mean, yeah, exactly.
What if I'm a nefarious guy, and I just have a few of these out there so I can be one of these guys making one of these deals when somebody comes after me for what I actually did?
Yeah,
I mean, if you allow that to be a standard of evidence, criminals will use the system as the system is designed. Mm-hmm. Everybody will use the system as the system is designed. That's how human beings work. But speaking of criminals, let's talk about some of the criminals involved in this investigation and some of the violations of this investigation.
Yeah.
Because when I heard this, my head nearly exploded.
Yeah. Well, just to add to what you just said, though, that I believe is exactly what happened with Ross. It was set up, and it's very easy to have, someone's on your trail, it's very easy to, it's, in fact, I was told, quote unquote, child's play to go in there and just plant this or that or this and make it all change. But anyway, yeah, so it's very unreliable. As far as the criminals involved, well, we have admitted criminals, so we don't have to speculate. They're in prison right now. There's a DEA agent. These guys were at the core of the investigation, by the way, Karl Marx Force and an NSA / Secret Service agent, Sean Bridges, who had inside backdoor access to the site, stole over $1 million. They also had the ability to act as different aliases, including, quote unquote, Dread Pirate Roberts, who was the pseudonym of whoever was running it, as well as others. They could change chats on the marketplace and the forum, because there were two different things on the site. They could change passwords, PIN numbers, get into bank accounts. They had the keys to the kingdom, basically. And this was not allowed to be known to the jury. This was precluded. The jury had no idea these people even existed. And so, yeah. I mean, that alone is just outrageous.
Well, you got two things there. One, that they had this type of access.
Yeah.
Like, so you would think the jury should at least know that it's possible. But then they admitted criminal behavior with this access, and the jury cannot be told that. That is beyond even comprehensible. Because how is that possible in a country that's supposed to be what the United States is supposed to be? Because every single thing they touch should be inadmissible. Because clearly they can't be trusted.
That's right.
And if you had been able to tell the jury that, I don't think you could have got a conviction.
Yeah. There would be reasonable doubt. There would be reasonable doubt. And this murder for hire business, that was based on evidence by one of these guys who's in jail now. He provided the chat, supposedly, that proves, supposedly, that DPR, supposedly, did this. And it's like, really? The guy's in prison. I'm supposed to believe him? I mean, this is your evidence?
Well, so, that philosophy that this judge has such a problem with is directly counter to that type of behavior. So everything that philosophically drove your son to do the things he did do is counter to this type of an accusation that he would be involved in something like this.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, interesting anecdote. It is counter because it was all about nonviolence. Do no harm, the whole bit, throughout. And throughout his life, really. But, this judge was recommended by Chuck Schumer for her position on the bench. The lead prosecutor, Preet Bharara, who was recently fired by Trump, was Schumer's special counsel for years. Ross was hauled from California, where he was arrested, to New York, Schumer State, for trial. This is so political. And so the whole philosophy, yeah, it's all about that. Yeah. But it is totally against his not only what Ross has written and what the site was about, but his life testifies to the fact that he is a nonviolent, peaceful person. Even now in the prison, we've had guards, counselor, case manager, legal team, all kinds of people come up to us and Ross and his lawyer and say, Ross doesn't belong in here. He's a good guy. He's a nice guy. This is ridiculous. He shouldn't be in this place. Because where they put him, because of his sentence, not because of his his designation score, but his sentence is in a very violent place with a violent gangs and violent people. And it's dangerous. It's a dangerous place to be. And they've put him in there. So anyway. That's a whole other issue, the whole prison system, but.
Well, I mean, yeah. I bet, like, so if you want to really know about cancer, talk to a cancer patient, right? Or a cancer patient's loved one that had to take matters into their own hand and do everything they could for them. So I bet you've learned things about our criminal justice system since Ross was arrested that, like, you had no idea about prior to it.
Oh, yeah. A lot. Yeah, I'd never been in a prison or known people, really. You know, I've learned a lot. And it's a world unto itself. The Bureau of Prisons, as far as I know, is not accountable to anyone but the President of the United States and the U.S. Attorney General. They are a potentate unto themselves with no accountability whatsoever that I can see. And they can do pretty much, not everything they want. Obviously, they can't, you know, murder everyone in there or something like that. But the power, it's like a bureaucracy on steroids. Let's put it that way. It's like the DMV on steroids beyond your worst nightmares. It's just, and yet I have to say that there are good people working there. There are decent human beings in there, like the ones who said Ross is a good guy. And, you know, I've even met a couple of libertarian guards, believe it or not. So, you know, it gives me a little hope, but as far as the structure of the thing, it's pretty evil. And that, you know, there's a guy in there. He's a friend of Ross who, he got life for selling marijuana 15 years ago. He's done 15 years now for selling marijuana. This prison happens to be in Colorado where it's legal now. And he got a life sentence. There is no reason the taxpayers should have to pay for this or that he should have his life destroyed for something he did 15 years ago that was a nonviolent selling marijuana. I mean, it's just, it's terrible what they're doing to people in our criminal justice system.
Well, and they do a really good job of convincing people that, like, that's where the bad people are.
Well, right? Yeah.
Like, it doesn't, you don't have to worry about it because you want them there because that's where the bad people are. And one of the ways they do that is, like you said, with the violence in the prison that Ross is unfortunately in, there are bad people there.
Mm-hmm.
There are, it's not like all of them are like Russ or this gentleman that sold marijuana. There are rapists, murderers. There are people that you're like, yeah. I don't know if that's the place for them, but I want them somewhere. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, some there's some people like I can go into a wood chipper for all I care. I mean, but by putting those people up as examples, then you can make anybody that touches that system by association look really bad, which is also very counter to the way our system of justice is supposed to work. There are countries where the accused in a trial is referred to as criminal. In other words, criminal state, you know, whether you plead guilty or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that here. We refer to somebody in a court system like that as the accused or the defendant, not the criminal.
Mm.
And when you start, and all you're doing is taking and extending that, when you start to utilize the prison industrial complex and show these, you know, ganged up, tatted up, dangerous people, and then you make people feel like, well, anybody in there must deserve to be in there. When it's anything from somebody like your son serving double life plus 40 with no chance of parole to a dad that's in prison because or jail because he lost his job and can't afford his child support. Right?
Yeah.
And you've got all this amalgamation of people thrown in there, and then the average person, the average soccer mom, the average, you know, white-collar working guy with his three kids and his picket fence are just convinced if they're in there, they must be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've learned that's not true. And you know, they're not necessarily bad. And, you know, granted, I agree, you know, violent people who are going to harm us, people, you know, society, yeah, society has to be protected from violent people. But there are mostly nonviolent people in prison, over 60%. And these excessive sentences of decades and decades and decades because of the drug war it doesn't help anything. But except for making money for a lot of people in terms of jobs and the government's expansion. It doesn't. And, you know, I was talking to Ross about it, actually. We're saying, God, it's kind of an old-fashioned model, you know, the dungeon model. Throw them in the dungeon and, you know, throw away the key kind of thing. For people who are nonviolent, you know, maybe it would make more sense to put an ankle bracelet on them and have them do retribution, pay back, be home with their families, or maybe their children won't end up in there. I mean, we have other options. And, you know, they call it correctional, but it's not correctional. In fact, it's a criminal education program in there. You know?
Well, there's definitely nonviolent individuals that go to prison for, let's say, a 4 or 5 year term and come out and end up in a life of crime and become violent people because they had to be to survive.
Exactly. And that's one reason, you know, I've relocated to Colorado and make it a point to see Ross all the time, as well as friends and other family and everybody, because we really believe he needs a lifeline to the normal world because it becomes your world. And I'm happy to say he hasn't changed. He's still a wonderful person. He's still peaceful and has a good attitude, great attitude, really, considering. And, you know, it's been 4 years, not 20, not 30.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're talking, and I worry about that. I mean, and what a waste, because he is such, you know, look, you can argue what he did, when he was 26 was reckless, allowing what was allowed on Silk Road, you know, however long he was in it. 26 year olds do reckless things. They do. You know, we know that. We all know that. People, they also change and mature. He's 34 now. And, it's like to have no second chances in our system, especially the federal system. There's no parole.
Yeah, exactly. So
there's no second chances. That's since the '80s, by the way. Before that, there was. And, it's really wrong.
Well, and you mentioned retribution or restitution, right? So here's what I would say. Like, one of the things I think you need to be able to put somebody in prison is a victim. So even if I'm a victim, I may not want you to go to prison or jail, right, depending on the length of time. So let's say, Linda, you broke into my house and you stole my computer and a couple silver bars and stuff, and you took about $500 worth of stuff from me. What do you think I want more, Linda go to jail or my $500 worth of stuff back?
Exactly.
I want my stuff back. Now, here's the interesting thing about that. Like, if we let victims make that call, then I think you'd see a lot less people in prison and jail. However, if we said, okay, show me the victim that's making the choice between being restored or having a sentence served, and there wasn't one, then maybe we don't need to be putting that person anywhere, because you don't have someone that was injured financially, physically, emotionally, in any way by their actions. So I wonder if they said, okay, we want all the people that feel they were victimized by Ross to come forward and testify against him. Would anybody show up? And my instinct is no one would show up.
Well, no one showed up at trial. No one came forward at trial. They had no victim.
The state is the victim, and the state represents the people, and that's their bullshit. That's what they say. The state versus.
Mm-hmm. And that's true.
Right?
It's the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute.
That's right.
Right? Wait a minute. Wait, okay, well, who are you representing? On behalf of whom? The people. No. Which people? Like, there's 330 million of us. Which people were harmed in this? And I think at least we should have, like, these severe sentences. Like, if they're going to say this stuff's criminal, I don't like it. There's a lot of things I don't like. Trust me, this would be a very different place if I was in charge. starting with, I'd exercise very little of my in charge other than to say you're not allowed to do things to people. That's it, right? Don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. That includes you, state. But
yeah,
right, that includes you. You're included in this. But if we're going to have the system we have under its supposed legitimacy, then at least for serious census, let's say greater than 5 years, you should have to show a victim.
I think that's excellent. I think you're right.
You know, like, okay, show me somebody that was harmed. Well, the people were some, no. That, no theoretical nebulous crap or it costs tax money. No. Where's the individual? If you want to put somebody away for the rest of their life, show me someone they hurt. So why do you think they came down so hard on Rusty? I mean, you kind of alluded to this, but the Bitcoin thing, the philosophy example.
Yeah. And they said, they go, well, you were the first. I think it was very threatening to have the internet used in this way. And they even said so. They said, you were the first to use the internet in quote unquote this way, and you must be an example. Now, there's no law saying if you're the first to do anything that you could be the one, you would get a worse sentence. We're supposed to, that has nothing to do with it. But I think the whole idea of this marketplace that was out of control, that was run on cryptocurrency, it was very new. It was a whole very new thing. I think it was very threatening. And also, they're very against Tor, because, which is the Onion Router, which is the, anonymous browsing, which we've seen how they want to check out our browsing history. And they even said in Ross's papers that anyone who uses Tor has criminal intent. Well, dissidents use Tor, journalists use Tor, a lot of legitimate people
CIA
use Tor.
Agents use Tor.
Yeah, that's true.
FBI agents use Tor.
Well, they're allowed to.
CIA assets use Tor,
mm-hmm.
Right? I mean,
Well,
and I think you can see like how this was all contrived together, because if you don't think the government has influence on the media, like, I don't even know what to say, but right when this was going on, all of these criminal investigative shows were talking about the dark web and murder for hire and Bitcoin, and, and they were saying, like they never heard of it before. They use something called Bitcoin to pay it. We can't trace it at all. Well, then how do you know they did it? We can't trace it. It's completely untraceable. We have no idea. But we know they did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the media, much of the media, obviously not you, not others, but a lot of the mainstream media is just Pravda, basically. They just spout, as far as I can tell, what the government says. And they, you know, they want access, and they also get their talking points, and they echo each other. So it's really been, that's another been eye-opener for me, is seeing the media and how little you can rely on what they say to be accurate, and they don't seem to care. They really don't seem to care. As you know, they're very sensationalistic, and they want to jump on whatever's clickbait. And I've gotten to where I believe very, very little of what I read in the media without some kind of corroboration. You know,
I think that's actually the hope, though, that people are starting to be that way.
Yeah,
because like, my wife is, right? My middle-aged grandmother, who was a nurse for 20 years, doesn't trust the media at all.
Good.
Is not an anti-vaxxer, but questions the safety of vaccines, so she would be labeled one by those that use that, like calling you a Holocaust denier or something. You know, and like for her to be there. Because when I started all this stuff with my show, she thought I was nuts. She's like, I love you and do whatever you want, but you're crazy. And I never pushed anything. But she'd come to me and go, did you know blah, 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 blah? And I'd go, oh, yeah, I knew that. Told you that 5 years ago. Oh, yeah. And I think more and more people that are mainstream people are starting to realize, like, you can't continuously lie. There was a Hitler quote, right? You tell a lie loud enough and long enough, people will believe it.
Yeah.
That's true, but they won't believe it forever.
Mm.
And they won't believe it when it starts to hurt them that lie is believed. Then they'll start to question it. And I think we're starting to turn a corner there. I really hope we are.
I hope so. I think it's a race for the internet too, because I feel like the government is really wants control of it, and so I feel like, you know, the internet's been our hope, but I worry about, you know, maintaining the freedom on the internet.
Absolutely. So how can people help you, Lynn, and help Ross?
Well, we have a website, freeross.org. It's kind of the hub of everything. And there's a lot more about the case on there if you want to learn details. We're actually going to put up a much bigger document that goes into, it's highly footnoted, kind of lays out. We couldn't use sealed and undisclosed evidence, which still exists, tons of sealed stuff about it. There's all kinds of questions.
I mean, there was a, just to digress slightly, there was a login by Dread Pirate Roberts, quote unquote, when Ross was in solitary confinement 7 weeks after arrest. Who was that? I mean, there was.
You mean they don't give you internet access to your criminal website from solitary confinement? They don't do that?
Yeah, no. Ross doesn't even get not only internet, but he can't even have email. They'll give violent gang leaders email privileges, but they won't let Ross on email in the prison. It's unbelievable. But anyway, they really don't know what to make of him. But in any case, there's a lot more information. There will be even more information. And so that's there. But there's ways to help. You know, it's one of the ways the government crushes people who are fighting them is financially, frankly. You know, it's very, very expensive to fight them. They have unlimited money. I guess I just go print some more, whatever.
Sure.
And they have unlimited manpower and all that. So that's always, we always welcome help that way. But also, I'm really anybody who has political connections, you know, that would, please reach out to me. We need help in high places. Also, anyone who might have any idea about NSA, the NSA investigation into Bitcoin, to me, it's very plausible, probable that they were investigating Silk Road specifically because that was the only place people were using Bitcoin. And if they were, that's illegal and could potentially help in this case. If anyone has any, you know, I know it's a long shot, but anything that could prove that, but any kind of political connections would be helpful, or any kind of connections that people think would, someone who has, can make things happen or can give us good input, that would be wonderful. And then there's other things, you know, a take action page, you know, volunteering and that sort of things. So it's really just me, mostly me, and then help from, you know, my husband supporting our family, and then my daughter helps, and other family and friends. But there's a few people really, and it's got to be a grassroots thing. And again, as you mentioned, you know, it's not just Ross. It's much bigger than an individual person or a website.
It's not just Ross. It's not just cryptocurrency. It's not just drugs.
Oh, right? Yeah. Definitely
it is the right to freedom of expression. It's the right to privacy of every single American that touches anything digital.
Mm-hmm.
That touches it. You know, your grandmother who barely knows how it works, but she looks stuff up. It's as much her right to privacy as anybody else.
That's a good point. They'll know everything they can know everything she's doing without a warrant, without her knowing, they can just know. And it's all just fine. And yeah. Exactly.
And you know, and when you talk about the horrible things that could happen because of this, what mm-hmm. you have is the natural reaction of people that say, well, that'll never happen here. I'll tell you how it always happens, because people think it will never happen, and therefore they lose vigilance against it. That's
absolutely.
I guarantee you, if somebody would have said in 1932 in Germany, if we keep doing this, they're going to put 6 million Jews in concentration camps, the first thing out of the person's mouth, albeit in German, would have been, that's never going to happen here.
Oh, yeah.
And it's thought process that leads every single major, you know, mass murder, mass abuse by government always starts with, they'll never do that.
And that's a really good point. And I was in Auschwitz. I was on a speaking tour in Eastern Europe, and I was there. And when you see it, and I listened to, overheard a guard, not a guard, no, not a guard, a tour guide saying, said to his group, he said, the lesson here is watch your politicians. This wasn't that long ago.
No, it's not.
And you realize it really wasn't. And of course, it's happening in North Korea. But gulags and concentration camps aren't that long ago.
Well,
and it definitely can happen here.
Let me ask you this horrifying question. What would have happened if in 1935, 1936, 1937, 1938, Nazi Germany had the technology that we have today?
Yes. That's a really good point.
There wouldn't be a Jewish person on the planet.
Well, and several, many
others
as well.
Yeah, I'm not just saying that's my lead example.
Absolutely. No, you're right.
No,
no,
would there be a gypsy left? There wouldn't be a, you know, I mean, most religions in general would be mm-hmm. wiped from the face of the earth. There would have been no hiding. There would have been no real mechanism of resistance.
That's right. And that's where we are. We are practically there now. So then we're supposed to trust the government. Our founders didn't. Our founders didn't trust the government. That's why we have checks and balances.
No.
You know, and you know, it's and to turn to the government to help you and to keep you safe. Well, at what price?
I trust my wife. I trust my best friend, and I trust my dog. And then I'm done. That is the limitations of my trust.
Yeah.
You know, and I operate under what I call the 10% scumbag theory. Like, people mm-hmm. think, like, it's shocking that, you know, a Catholic priest will molest a child or something. I don't, because there's a lot of Catholic priests. Mm-hmm. And I figure about 1 in 10 people have that sociopath gene in them. And it's just how expressed is it? How much courage do they have to use it? And how do they use it? Violently? Or do they go into government positions or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So you get me any group of 100,000 or more people, and there's going to be a significant number of them that are sleazebags.
Yeah.
And that is alone, and most people would go, okay, then you can't trust government.
Right.
Because even if they didn't gravitate there, even if it was proportional to the rest of society, which I don't believe it is,
yeah.
You'd still have 10% of these people who can't be trusted. And what happens when that person becomes a district federal judge?
Mm-hmm.
Or a federal prosecutor, right?
Yep.
Or a senior investigative member of the FBI or Secret Service. What happens when that person gets there? I think we can just look at what we talked about today and go, this is what happens.
Are those people particularly attracted to those positions of power?
Of course.
That's the other question.
Of course,
you know?
They are.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, yeah, no, it's, I think you're absolutely right. And I'm trying to wake people up through this. I'm hoping that this case can shine a spotlight on some of these things, since I'm a firsthand witness to so much of it. And, you know, I'm just a normal person. I'm not, you know, I'm just like, hey, take a look. Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
No. And it means something has to come from this that's good.
Yes.
Like
something does.
So where exactly is this now? Is the Supreme Court deciding whether to hear it? Are they actually hearing it? Where are we at with it?
We are at that this Friday they're going to have what's called conferencing, and they will decide what to do with it. What could happen is they could decide to hear it on its own merits. They could decide not to hear it and just forget about it. Hopefully that, please God, won't happen. Or it can be held pending another Fourth Amendment case that's already been accepted, Carpenter versus U.S., and hold it. And this is what the U.S. Solicitor General suggested happened with Ross's case. And once they rule on Carpenter, that will affect the principles involved in Ross's case as well. Mm. At that point, depending on how they rule, it would go back probably to the appellate level, the Second Circuit, which again is in New York, but with guidance from the Supreme Court. And so, you know, it's a long haul. That's why, you know, it's so, it's really a challenge to fight them. They have everything's on their side. And, one of the other precedents I just want to quickly say, because it's kind of ties in, is that due process in our law and our rule of law is another thing that's just disintegrating. So, and that was proven in Ross's trial where, you know, evidence was precluded and witnesses were blocked and all of these things happened. It's like, this is America. And it's been so, it's like all everything we've been talking about, it's like we're at a tipping point in history here. And I feel like we're really at a precarious place. We're at a very pivotal place in history right now, because we're on the verge of this amazing digital age, which of course has a dark side, which is all this power. And we have to decide which way we're going to tip here. You know, is it towards more freedom and innovation, and or is it going to be living under the thumb or the foot, the boot heel of people in power who have this amazing, you know, digital and, worldwide control. And like you say, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And it's really, really important what's going on in the courts right now. And even if you don't agree with, you know, you don't like Ross, you don't like the whole thing, it's not about that. These are important court cases that will set precedent. And, you know, just like with the drug war, it's not about drugs. You can hate drugs, but be against the drug war.
Absolutely.
I'm not for drugs. Yeah.
Well, and I've talked to people that are like the extreme right-wing conservative, you know, religious right, drugs are the devil, marijuana, good people don't use marijuana, that type of thing. And it, even when I brought this case up and I said, so if everything they say is true, you know, that he was tried for, how long do you think he should be in prison? And you get numbers from 5 to 20 years, depending on how extreme the person is. And when you say, well, how about double life without parole? They're like, no, no, that doesn't make any sense. So even the person that's the indoctrinated statist is like, no, this is not, this is not justice. And it doesn't serve anybody except the government. No.
Exactly.
It does not serve
us. Good to hear. I'm glad to hear that people have that reaction, because even if, yeah, even if everything's true, which I don't believe for a minute, it's like, this is a, she could have given him a 20-year mandatory minimum. That's long. That's a generation.
Yes,
for a 20-something-year-old guy, that's a big sentence. And believe me, Ross is a fast learner. It's not like he's going to go out and do anything.
Well, let's see. If he went in at 26 and it was me, then I would be looking at getting out in August. That's how long that is. That's how long that is, right? I mean, 20 years is huge. And
huge,
I'm sure you would have fought it, but at least maybe you could sort of get your head around it. You know, because
there's a light at the end of the tunnel, even if you're youth. You know, you'd be 50, never having been on the internet in 20 years. I don't think you're a threat. But life, his whole life, what does that do for anybody? And, and you know,
the double life plus 40, that's almost like the football player that gets called for excessive display in the end zone. Like, what are you even doing there? Like, how does that make any sense, right? Like, life is life in the federal system anyway. It's like, it's like spiking the football in the face of the opponent. It just, it seems like a very much of a power trip thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's yeah, exactly. It's an abuse of government power. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's so many issues here, and it kind of everything converged on this case, you know, crypto and the drug war and privacy, and there's so many issues and due process all coming together in one place. And it's pretty amazing. I still can't quite believe I'm in this situation. I'm like, I wake up and I'm like, huh? What? Okay, here I go. You know. Because like I said, you can't undo it. You see it, and you're like, not only for Ross, but all the other people I know now.
Well, Lynn, I just got to say, I mean, I think you're an example of what a real hero is.
And
I know it's not what you asked for, and I know it's not what you want. And that's why I feel that way. Because the people that want to be that, they never really are. You're very much a situational thing where what else do you do? But there's a lot of people in your situation would have just, you know, went into depression or, you know, poked at it a little bit. You've gone at it like a warrior. And I think there's a large percentage of the people in this country don't even realize how much they owe you for taking this fight to the state yet. They just don't understand. And hopefully shows like this will help get that word out where people will understand. This is not really about drugs and Bitcoin. This is about rights.
Right.
This is about equal and fair treatment under the law. Even law that I disagree with, I at least think it should be proportional and equal.
Yeah.
And that we should treat an accused congressman the same way we treat a guy accused of building a website. But we don't.
Yeah. No.
It's a sickness, honestly. But I thank you for fighting this fight. And, you know, if you want to come back here anytime to give us any kind of an update, you know, don't even worry about the form. I've said that, you know, there's only one way, but with stuff like this that gets time sensitive, get in touch with Dorothy and we'll square this away and we'll get you back in front of the audience.
Oh, thanks, Jack. It's been great talking to you. It's been a lot of fun. And really, you know, you have such good insights. And that'd be great. And it's so good to have met you. And so thanks so much for the opportunity.
Not a problem at all.
Yeah.
And thank you for being with us today. I wish you the best day you can have going forward.
Thanks so much.
You know, guys, to me, Lynn really is an inspiring woman. She really is. When I met her in New Hampshire, she came up, she wanted to talk to me, and I looked at her and I said, oh, my God, you're Lynn Albright. And I just gave her the biggest hug I was capable of. My heart breaks for this woman. To have to see your son put into such a situation at such a young age for so long. For even if you think that what he did warrants prison time, I can't find anybody who thinks it should be double life plus 40. I can't find anybody that thinks this makes sense. And it's just a horrible thing to face. And I really am inspired by her willingness to fight, not just for Ross, but for everyone, because this does affect us. Please get over to freeross.org and see what you can do to help and be informed about this and tell people about this. This is one of those things that your average person doesn't think matters to them. But my God, it matters to them. And I meant what I said. The people that say that'll never happen here are the reason that eventually these things always have happened in the past. I'm sure in Mao's China, there was somebody that said that'll never happen. They'll never do that. I'm sure in Hitler's Germany, there were people that said that'll never happen. They'll never do that. I'm sure. I'm 100% sure that that's what happened. Anyway, guys, don't have a T-Spaz item for you today, but if you want to help support the show, you can do that. Just go to tspaz.com whenever you shop online. There probably is something up. But again, I was tripled up on interviews this week, so don't have an item prepared for the show for you today. But just know this. If you see it on tspaz.com, I own it. I've used it. I've researched it for my personal use. I mean, I think that's something people really need to understand about my Amazon stuff that I've reviewed. There's nothing there that I just like went, oh, I bet people will buy this and threw it up there. Or said, hey, you know, people buy this particular whatchamacallit. So I'll pick three of them and say these are the three best ones. If you'll notice, I generally recommend a single product or this product that is available in these configurations, and this is why I would choose one. This is why. The stuff that ended up on T-Spaz, the way this all started is I looked around my house and said, you know, over 10 years of doing a show and more than 10 years of being an Amazon customer, I've bought a lot of stuff for my needs, just like we all do. And I have this belief that when I spend my money, I should make the best decision with it I possibly can. So I take everything seriously. I take a $10 product seriously. So I research it. I look at reviews. I check fakespot.com to make sure they're not phony reviews. I check other websites about it, and I look into the features, and I look at the reviews. I don't just look at the good reviews. I look at the bad ones. I look at the bad ones, and when the bad ones are like, the box had a hole in it, I'm like, okay, this one, the negative reviews on this one are invalid. You know, it broke. It's a lifetime warranty. Did you return it, and did they replace it? No. You know, things break. It happens. What I want to know is, this is a quality product that you can depend on to last and do what it says it's going to do? If it's a food product, I want to know that does it taste great. So I don't just research it and then buy it for myself and then recommend it to you. I research it, I buy it for myself, and I use it. And only then do I recommend it to you. Here's a perfect example. Recently, we bought a Keurig. And it causes the Keurig little pods to explode. So we returned it for a new one, which I was still willing to recommend this particular Keurig machine to you. And guess what happened? The new one caused the same thing. The pods explode and it fails constantly. So it went back under Amazon's wonderful return policy. But I don't have one to recommend to you. We might try a different model. I don't know. But right now, I'm not recommending that product to you. Why would I? If I wouldn't keep it and use it. And I bought it, and when I first got it, I thought it was great. And I used it for like a week. But for an electronic product, that's not long enough. When it started blowing pods up in the second week, I said, I'm not going to recommend this. So when you go to T-Spaz, just know that. Just know that. That I own and use the items there. I've tested them. They meet my approval. But anytime you shop online, you can go to tspaz.com and help support the work that we do. That brings us to our song of the day. And our song of the day is a song that when I looked at it, again, we're in Gender Bender Week. This is where men are covering songs originally done by women. It's by a band called Counting Crows, which I like those guys. And the song is called Big Yellow Taxi. And I was like, cool, a song I never heard before. So I clicked the link that John Adam includes in his notes, and the song starts playing, and you know, they paved paradise and put up a parking lot. I'm like, I know that song. I know this version of it. I know the original version of it. You know, by Joni Mitchell, and I'm like, wow, this is an interesting song. I learned a few things about this song when I reviewed it. First of all, I was a big fan of music from the 70s and the 80s, but I never really got into this Joni Mitchell chick, right? I liked this song, and I'm probably familiar with some of her other songs, but I never dug into it. So I didn't know how old this song was. The song was originally released in 1970. And for some reason in my head, I always thought it was released after the Eagles song called The Last Resort by Don Henley. Those two songs seem very similar to me. If you're not familiar with The Last Resort, look it up. And I always kind of felt like this song was in some way possibly inspired by The Last Resort. Now I want to look into The Last Resort and see maybe it was some way inspired by this. Not that Henley couldn't come up with some pretty good thoughts on his own, but there's a very similar vibe to these songs in a different way, because this is almost sad, but like a happy undertone to it. And I think it's done for the contrast, honestly. But what I was also surprised about is the genesis of this song. So what this song was inspired by is Joni Mitchell said that she wrote Big Yellow Taxi on her first trip to Hawaii. She took a taxi to the hotel, and when I woke up the next morning, I threw back the curtains and saw beautiful green mountains in the distance. Then I looked down, and there was a parking lot as far as I could see, and it broke my heart. This is a blight on paradise. That's when I sat down and wrote the song, which I find very interesting. I wonder how many people that are this like environmentally conscious, it's sad that there's big parking lots. I wonder how she would have felt if there wasn't a parking lot for her when she checked in this hotel. Well, the hotel wasn't there because they didn't want to ruin paradise. It's interesting a lot of times that people will take this stand, but yet they're the ones that want to go to these places, and you know, maybe other people do too, and I think there is a balance in these things, but I get the gist of the song. Paving paradise and putting up a parking lot. Now, the other thing that got me and should have keyed me into how old this song was, one of the lines in it is, put away that DDT now, give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. We got rid of DDT a long time ago, so that kind of dates the song. That was a little bit interesting to me. And then the other thing was why didn't I know that this song was called Big Yellow Taxi? I thought it was called They Paved Paradise, because that's in there. The word taxi is only in this song, or the term actually, Big Yellow Taxi, is only in the song, well, twice. Once in the title, that doesn't count, and one line in the song, and it's from the last verse before the final chorus. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. It's the only time the word taxi's in the song. So I guess that, and I wonder how many of you did like know this song and like, oh yeah, I know that song. And we'll go, I didn't know that was the name of the song. I'm guilty as charged. I did not know that was the name of the song. It does make us think about taking for granted things though, and not appreciating them until they're gone. And that can be more than just a beautiful place that gets paved over. That can be more than just the woods that you played in when you were a kid turned into a strip mall. That could be a relationship with somebody, like a brother or a sister or a father or a son or a friend. I'm sure there was a point where our guest today, Lynn Albright, saw her son free before he was charged for the last time and never thought she would have to go to a federal prison to visit him. And I'm sure even when that happened, she never thought she would hear the words double life without parole. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got until it's gone? Try to see what you have today in your friends, your family, your relationships, your opportunities, so that you can make the most of them before they all are gone. Because sooner or later, either you're gone, or those opportunities fade, or those people are gone. It happens. It's reality. With that, it's been Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't. They paved paradise and put up a parking lot, with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paved paradise and put up a parking lot. They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum, and they charge the people a dollar and a half to see them. No, 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 don't it
paradise, put up a fucking lie. And now they pay paradise to put up a fucking lie. One night. I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took my girl away. Now don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be paradise, put up a fucking lie.